Today we finish chapter 69, and in that chapter something very exciting happened. And the exciting thing happened in each and every palace that Narada walked into. He saw something very wonderful. Everything was wonderful. Externally it appeared very simple and normal, but because Krishna was the one doing it in each palace, same time, not at the same time meaning same time of the day, but the same time meaning simultaneously. How is this possible?
Krishna knows.
It's not possible for the material mind and for a material person. But what is impossible for the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead? He's already done other impossible things also. When he married, I think it was Satya. There was a Swayamvara ceremony for Satya. And the king required that, what was it, 8 bulls or 6 bulls?
Seven.
Neither 6 nor 8, but 7 bulls become defeated. And how did Krishna do it? He expanded himself into how many Krishnas?
Seven.
One for each. But that, okay, 7, that's one thing. Subhara Muni could also expand himself. But this is 16,108. And he had a separate palace for each one. And the palaces were so wonderful. So what do you think of that?
Something fell.
Yeah, who fell? Was it a person or?
A flower fell.
From who?
We should pray flowers.
Yeah.
Who did it fall from?
Gopinath threw a flower.
Gopinath. He likes it.
He's impressed.
So what do you think of that? Is it possible? Is it real? Is it just wonderful that it's just Krishna? Is this really happen or not? Is it just some story from some old book? You are a handyman, huh? But how to get it to the point of realization, to deepen it, because it's attractive, certainly. But I was about to ask you if you ever read any sci-fi books. No. But science fiction, fantasy fiction and things like that, if this was fantasy and this was fiction, it would have a completely different taste to it. Because those things have an unsubstantial taste. Insubstantial taste. And they don't bring sweetness to the heart like Krishna's pastimes does. But how to bring it to the point of realization? One needs continuous hearing and also be able to express. If someone says, do you really believe this? Now who's going to raise their hand and say, some of the time, because in Gopinath might throw more than a rose at you or something, or the devotees will think, look at this person, you know. But there has to be some situation where one can express one's doubts. The atmosphere should be free, that one can humbly express one's doubts. Otherwise, what happens if we don't express them, they're never cleared up. There's this one time I walked into a university professor's office in, guess what city? Guess what city it was? I'll give you a hint. It's the capital city of where you were born. Yes, it was KL. Of course, where else would it have been? That was obvious.
I thought it's giving a hint in US, which I'm going to say, I was thinking.
And you couldn't have imagined that it would be such a holy place as KL. And it said, and the college professors always like to have little signs on their doors and on their, and this one said, it said, ask a question and be a fool for a moment, for a minute. Don't ask a question and be a fool for your life. Maybe it was in New York. No one would say that in New York. But anyway, this chapter will describe 1, 2, 3 things. Three things. The first thing, I think it's for the first 24 verses. It describes more about Krishna, what Krishna used to do every day. So the chapter is entitled, chapter 70 is entitled, Lord Krishna's Daily Activities. What was the 69th chapter entitled?
Narad visiting Krishna.
In Loka. And 70 is Lord Krishna's daily activities. But something's going to happen after Krishna's daily activities are described. And something extremely wonderful, in my humble opinion, will happen before the end of Krishna's daily activities are described. And then something also wonderful will happen at the end of the chapter. And a great puzzle will be put forward. A puzzle that it will take the greatest mind to solve. I should start after that lead up, I guess. What to do? Sukadeva Goswami said, this is the first verse, as dawn approached, the wives of Lord Madhav, each embraced by the neck of her husband, each embraced around the neck by her husband, cursed the crowing roosters. The ladies were disturbed that now they would be separated from him. Purport. The description of Lord Krishna's daily activity starts with the crowing of the rooster. In other words, Krishna's daily activities didn't begin at 11 o'clock. He didn't get up late. He got up very early. Lord Krishna's wives knew that the Lord would dutifully get up and perform his prescribed morning rituals, and thus they were agitated at their coming separation from him, and they cursed the roosters. They were already madhavyo virahaituraha. They were disturbed, atura, they were disturbed over the prospect of varaha, over the prospect of now Krishna is going to leave me. Not for a long time period, but yet he was going to be separated from him, from them as he went about his daily prescribed duties. This is also described in the final chapter of the 10th canto and the 90th chapter, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke about this as well, that the queens used to stay up all night, and this is called Prema Vaititya. They would stay up all night long, and they would hear the kurari bird. I don't know what a kurari bird is. It's not a magpie, that's for sure. But a kurari bird has a mournful cry, and they sing at night. So they're not sleeping at night. Usually birds sleep at night. So the queens would be up at night, and they would talk to to the Karari bird, and they would experience prema vaitsitya, which means separation from Krishna while Krishna is with them. Krishna is with them, and yet they would be experiencing separation from him. So that is described in the 90th chapter, very, very intimate and very wonderful. But here also very intimate and wonderful. The thought of separation from Krishna, what they had feared all night long, they would stay up all night long, oh, Krishna is going to be separated, we're not going to see him for a moment. Just imagine what love actually is, love for Krishna is. We can't imagine, but we should try to imagine. With our finite intelligence, we won't be able to reach the understanding of what love for Krishna is, but we should try to understand what type of love it is that always fearing, even when with Krishna, fearing, oh, I will be separated from him in 10 hours or 12 hours or 2 seconds. It's intolerable. Separation for a day is intolerable for the queens. This is the nature of their love, and therefore they curse the roosters. What is the funny thing, of course, about cursing the roosters? Not funny, but why does Krishna get up? Why does the Krishna leave and perform his daily duties that we will hear?
It's an example.
Okay, but what is he going to do?
Meditating himself.
Okay, but the day is beginning for him. So is it the roosters that is causing the day to begin?
No.
Ah, they are not causing the day to begin at all. They are just making a sound like an alarm clock. It's like saying the alarm clock is making the sunrise or something like that, causing the day, time to move on. No, it's just announcing that this is what this particular time is. So it's a type of irony, but they were so disturbed that they were so upset. And people also do this. They get angry at their alarm clocks. Oh, I have to get up now. Oh, but the queens weren't thinking like that. They were thinking, oh, we're going to be madhavayo varahi tura. They were disturbed and agitated, fearing separation from Madhava. Kunjata asapa. Asapa is a curse. So the kunjata, the peacocks, kukutan, the roosters, kujatan, who were crowing, asapam, they cursed them. Then, text 2, the bees buzzing, caused by the fragrant breeze from the Parijata garden, roused the birds from sleep. So what roused the birds from sleep? The bees buzzing, caused by the fragrant breeze from the Parijata garden. So the breeze came, and the breeze was so fragrant, it attracted the
bees.
The bees, because the bees like the fragrance, because the fragrance means the flowers and the pollen is nearby. So as soon as they get the fragrance carried by the breeze of the flowers of the, what kind of flowers? Parijata flowers that came from Swaga, came from heaven. They started buzzing, and the buzzing of the bees roused the birds from sleeping. So the breeze started, we could say the flowers started, and the breeze that collaborated to wake the bees. The breeze woke the bees, awoke the birds, and the birds began to sing loudly. They woke Lord Krishna like court poets reciting his glories. So what we see here also so is that a situation very similar to Braja. Not quite the same, because this is called Sambandhanuga or Sambandhatmika, where they have a relationship with Krishna. The queens have their relationship with Krishna, and this will come up a little bit later. But the gopis didn't even have that. But very, very, very similar mood to the love of the gopis, but different too. Three. So Krishna woke up by the sound of the birds. And then muhurtam tam tuvaidarbi namasriyat atishobhanam. This was, what does ati mean? Anyone know? What, in Bengali, you know what ati means? Very. Mm-hmm. Very. Shobha.
Beautiful.
Auspicious, that's translated here. But na'am sriyat. Negative. Did not think this was very auspicious. The birds were making such a sound. So who didn't? Vidarbhi. Who is Vidarbhi? Rukmini Devi. So at that time of the day, at that muhurta, Rukmini did not think this was very auspicious, even though it was very, because she was going to lose his embrace. So the lying in her beloved's arms, Queen Vidarbhi did not like this most auspicious hour, Brahma Muhurta, for it meant she would lose his embrace. And whose embrace? Priya Bhav Antaram Gata. Her beloved, the embrace of her Priya, her beloved. So, and Srila Srila Swami explains that this was the attitude of all the queens. And amazingly enough, as we heard, because one chapter sits upon the other. So, because it's very important that we remember, because if Krishna was petting his small children and showing them affection, and he was preparing to take bath, and he was practicing his sword fighting, and he was, what else was he doing that we heard that Narada saw? Performing the Pancha Jagyas. What else?
Playing the dice.
Playing dice.
Meditation, giving cows to the Brahmins.
Yes, what else?
Meeting with his ministers.
Discussing war, discussing peace, discussing the piety of the.
Going out in disguise.
Going out in disguise.
Calling those ministers.
Find out what they're up to. Yeah, and also. He was planning how to do pious things for the citizens, such as
building wells,
planting trees, gardens, parks. So they all sound like kingly, nice, auspicious things to do. But what was the amazing thing? The amazing thing that Krishna was, that made it so extraordinary, he was doing them all at the same time in different places. So even though they appear to be ordinary, they're extraordinary. So these activities that are being described, we should keep in mind the fact that it is Krishna doing it in one palace, and there are so many other things going on in other palaces with Krishna doing those as well. I remember in Jaipur. Who had been to Jaipur again? No, it was, yeah. So there's a fort above Jaipur called
Amber Palace.
So inside, it's an amazing palace. It's not really, really big or anything, but it's such a fort to keep away the other armies, whatever. So on a hill, and the king has a palace, and he had. And there was one of the two of the things that stuck in my mind was that one, there was a cart that one of the queens would be wheeled around in because she couldn't walk because she had so much gold and jewels on. Remember that?
Yeah.
Did you see that?
No.
You saw that? You have seen?
No.
Huh?
No.
And the other thing is that the king had his rooms, and then he had seven wives, this king. So he had one room for each of the wives. And then he had a passageway from his room to each of the wives, each of the rooms. But no one could see, the queens couldn't see which wife he was going to visit. So it was a separate passageway, so none of the queens could see who he was going to be visiting, because if they understood who he was visiting, maybe they would kill her or something like that, or they would become envious or angry like that. So no one knew, except one queen knew who he was with, only one. But she wouldn't tell. Because it would create enmity amongst the queens. But look what Krishna did with his 16,108 queens. He satisfied them all by staying with each and every one of them all the time. And each one of them thought, oh, Krishna loves me the most. Because he was with her all the time. He's not spending any time with any of the other queens. She loves me. And how do they know that he's not spending any time with any other queens? Because the same way that the queen knew, only one queen knew who the king was with. Because he was always with her. So upon the ground, the foundation of this amazing understanding of what Krishna is doing, we should understand that Krishna is embracing Rukmini and the other queens has nothing to do with the material world or material emotions. This is purely on the spiritual platform. Then 4 and 5. Brahme Muhurta Uttaya. What does that mean?
He woke up at Brahma.
Not only, he woke up. Uta. He got out of bed. Uta. And then immediately, what did he do? He did Atman. He touched water. With a clear mind, he would then meditate upon himself, the single self-luminous. What's the word for self-luminous? Meditate. Yes, Swayam Jyoti. He was self-luminous. He would meditate upon himself, the single self-luminous, unequaled, infallible, supreme truth, known as Brahman, who by his very nature ever dispels all contamination, and who through his personal energies, which caused the creation and destruction of this universe, manifests his own pure and blissful existence. So that's a lot to meditate on. We could also meditate on this sloka to understand the meaning. He would meditate upon himself, the single, there's only one reality, this is called adhyaya, non-dual, self-luminous, that swayam jyoti, that means that here we have a lamp, a light that is luminous, but it is not self-luminous. Why isn't it self-luminous? Why is it not self-luminous?
It draws energy.
Yes, taking energy from somewhere else. But Krishna is the origin, so where is he going to draw energy from? So he is self-luminous. His everything is coming. He and his energies are coming from. It's all coming from him. So you could see why Krishna can meditate upon this, because it's so wonderful, unequaled. And what is the Sanskrit word that means unequaled? There's one, I see the one used asama. And there's usually we put the other word there, but asama means unequal. Asama udva. Udva means better. So no one is equal and no one is more. So he is unequaled. Because no one could be equal to you. Like no one is equal to me in size. So that could mean I'm so small that everyone is bigger than me. But if you say asama udva, no one is equal and no one is better, so that means everyone is less. He's unequal, infallible. So what does infallible mean? The word used here is avyayam, which well, that's usually that we, what do we usually translate that as? Avyayam. Inexhaustible. Yeah. So infallible means doesn't make a mistake, or sometimes Prabhupada say no falling down. A sutta doesn't come down from its position. Who is known as Brahman? Brahman means what? What does Brahman mean? Means the greatest. Who by his very nature ever dispels all contamination. So that's the nature of purity, that's the nature of the sun, dispels contamination. And who through his personal energies which cause the creation and destruction of this universe manifests his own pure blissful existence. His energies also cause the creation and destruction of the universe, some of his different energies. But through his energies also he manifests his own pure blissful existence. So Satchit Ananda. So his existence is manifest through his Chit Shakti. That's his knowledge of existence. And eternity Sat. Here's the purport. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the word bhava in this verse indicates the created beings. Thus the compound word Lakshita Bhava Nivritim means that Lord Krishna gives pleasure to the created beings to his various energies. Of course, the soul is never created, but our material conditioned existence is created by the interaction of the Lord's energies. One who is favored by the Lord's internal potency can understand the nature of the Absolute Truth. This understanding is called Krishna consciousness. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that his energies are divided into inferior and superior, or material and spiritual potencies. The Brahma Samhita further explains that the material potency acts like a shadow following the movement of the spiritual reality, which is the Lord himself and his spiritual potency. When one is favored by Lord Krishna, he reveals himself to the surrendered soul, and thus the same creation that formerly covered the soul becomes an impetus for spiritual enlightenment, Vishwa Purna Sukhayate, and happiness. So Krishna got up. What is the first thing he did? Touch water. What is the upastrisya? Then each day the Lord worshipped the rising sun and propitiated. What does propitiating mean? Satisfied. The demigods, the sages and forefathers who are all his expansions, because he was acting as an ideal person, an ideal grihastha. The self-possessed Lord would then carefully worship his elders and the Brahmins, superiors. So this is something quite unique in Vedic culture that is very absent in contemporary culture. The respect of superiors, because if you want to be successful materially and push on and keep on pushing on, the basic principle is that no one is superior. I do everything by my own energy, by my strength. No one is superior. Ishwaraham. This is the modern materialistic mentality. Three M's. Modern materialistic mentality. And this type of mentality is suitable, in one sense, to move the material energy around. You need to have that mood of that I can do it. And by my power, and by my will, and by my desire, it's going to move. And I'm going to push it. I'm going to do it. And if you get in my way, be careful. You better move out of my way. That's the modern materialistic mentality. It depends on me. But the Vedic spiritual mentality, was quite different. The Vedic spiritual mentality, VSM, it doesn't have a ring to it. We have to think of a different way to place it. But the excuse me? Skate your way back home. But the mentality is quite different from that. Rather than thinking I can do it and no one is superior to me, it's the opposite. Superiors are worshipped. Elders are respected. And therefore, in this is how culture is passed on through the respect of elders. And therefore, the elders, what they have gained in life, they pass that on to the younger generation so that everyone doesn't have to find out everything the hard way by experiencing. So gaining the wisdom of life. So the elders, the Brahmins, sages, forefathers, all would be respected and worshipped. How Krishna would worship the Brahmins is then described. To those well-attired brahmanas, they were dressed cleanly, he would offer herds of tame and peaceful cows with gold-plated horns and pearl necklaces. These cows would, just imagine how nice they looked. The horns were gold-plated, and what else? What other decorations did they have? Pearl necklaces. Chaitanya, where did Krishna get the idea to give the cows pearl necklaces?
Oh, that happened on his childhood.
Something he carried over from his childhood.
That's another story.
And also, not only did they have gold horns, I mean, not even Rolls Royces have gold horns.
They
have
in Texas.
They just have long horns. These cows were also not only, they were also dressed in fine cloth. And the fronts of their hooves were plated with silver. And Krishna would be giving these away. Providers of abundant milk, they had each given birth only once and were accompanied by their calves. Daily, the Lord gave many groups of 13,084 cows to the learned brahmanas, together with linen, deerskins, and sesame seeds. These are all auspicious items. Purport. Sridhar Swami quotes several Vedic scriptures to show that in the context of Vedic ritual, a badwa here refers to 13,084 cows. The words badvam badvam dine dine from the verse said every day he would offer badvam badvam, many groups of these 13,084 cows, thus totaling 107 groups, totaling 1,400,000 cows, dine, dine, each day. Sridhar Swami gives further evidence that the usual practice for great saintly kings in previous ages was to give 107 such badwas, or groups of 13,084 cows. Thus, the total number of cows given in the sacrifice known as manchar is 14 lakhs, or 1,400,000 cows, 14 lakhs of cows every day.
Wow.
The word alankritebhyo viprebhyo indicates that in Lord Krishna's kingdom, the brahmanas were given nice clothes and ornaments and were thus well attired. in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada writes with striking and profound insight on these pastimes of Lord Krishna. The reader is strongly urged to study this book, which contains an invaluable wealth of information and commentary on the pastimes described in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Our humble attempt here can never equal the consummate purity and skill of our great master. Still, as a service offered at his lotus feet, we are simply presenting the original Sanskrit text of the 10th canto, word for word meanings, a clear translation, and a central commentary, for the most part based on the statements of the great spiritual masters in our line. Go vipra devata vida gurun bhutani sarvasa namaskrityatma sambhutir mangalanis samaspishat. Lord Krishna would offer obeisances to the cows, the Brahmins and demigods, his elders and spiritual masters, and all living beings, all of whom are expansions of his Supreme Personality. Then he would touch auspicious things. He would decorate his body, which is the very ornament of human society. It blesses it. It's the bhushana bhushanangam, the ornament of ornaments. In other words, it beautifies human society, or the ornaments are made beautiful by Krishna's wearing them. It's not that Krishna is made more beautiful than the ornaments. So he would decorate his body. So first he would do all these auspicious things, offer respect. The first thing that he did was offer respect. Why is that wonderful?
Because he's a supreme lord, everybody should be offering respect to him.
Yeah, yes. But what's the interesting thing? The first thing he did in the morning, practically, he offered respects to the cows. He would offer obeisances. Namaskrityami. He would offer obeisances to the cows, the Brahmins and demigods, his elders and spiritual masters, plural. Namaskritya. And all living beings, all of whom are expansions of the Supreme Personality. Then he would touch auspicious things. So, to offer respects first thing in the morning is very healthy. Why?
Establishes consciousness of humility.
Yeah.
Dependence.
Because when you get up in the morning, the last thing you feel like doing is bowing down to anyone. Just soon as we get up and start getting in consciousness to bow down, to establish us in the proper consciousness, a respectful consciousness that is auspicious and suitable for making spiritual advancement, as opposed to a master consciousness, that I can do it by my power consciousness. Then he would decorate his body, which is the very ornament of human society. It blesses human society by its existence and presence. Think of how beautiful Krishna was. And he would decorate his body with his own special clothes and jewelry, and with divine flower garlands and ointments. What kind of ointments? Fragrant. Srila Swami points out that Lord Krishna's own garments and ornaments includes the Lord's well-known yellow garments and his kastuba gem and so on. So he had his own different ornaments and cloth that he used to wear. He would then look at ghee, a mirror, the cows and bulls, the Brahmins and the demigods, and see to it that the members of all the social classes living in the palace and throughout the city were satisfied with gifts. After this, he would greet his ministers, gratifying them by fulfilling all their desires. After first distributing flower garlands, pan and sandalwood paste to the Brahmins, he would give these gifts to his friends, ministers, and wives, and finally, he would partake of them himself. So this is the king who's the head. He's not a tyrant at all. So this is the kind of kingly activities that gain the respect, love, and affection of everyone. All the praja, all the ones who are dependent upon him, look how he's acting. He's serving and respectful. So Krishna is pointed out as acting to teach human society the proper way to behave. By then, the Lord's chariot driver, whose name was?
Dharuka.
By then, the Lord's chariot driver would have brought him his supremely wonderful chariot, yoked with Sugriva and his other horses. Does anyone know the names of Krishna's horses? Sugriva, Saibya, Megapushpaka, and what?
Balika.
Yeah, there's four, yes? They all, one with Megapushpa means color of mega cloud, like the clouds today. His charioteer, now this is how the charioteer would act. He would bow down to the Lord and then stand before him. And the next, so Krishna is going to mount this chariot. So the charioteer would go like this, because he was being respectful of Krishna. He would hold on to the charioteer's hands like that, and he would use that as a support while he would mount the chariot. So Dharuka would have the touch of Krishna's hands, and he would make sure that he was being very, very firm and holding them so Krishna could be supported by them. And Krishna, of course, is the support of everything. Yet he would take that service from Dharuka, and giving that service was Dharuka's greatest pleasure. So holding on to his charioteer's hands, Lord Krishna would mount the chariot together with Satyaki and Uddhava, just like the sun rising over the easternmost mountain. So these were his two advisors. Uddhava was the son of Krishna's, he was his cousin, that means his Vaktrini, was he the son of one of Vasudeva's brothers? And Satyaki, who was the commander-in-chief. Now, what was another name for Satyaki? He was one of the survivors also of the Kurukshetra. He was very close to Krishna. There's another name for Satyaki too. Maybe you do. It's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, in the opening chapter.
Yes.
One of those. Huh? Which one it is. Now Krishna and Satyaki and Uddhava would mount the chariot just like the sun rising over the easternmost mountains. We have mountains in the east, don't we? Hills at least. And the sun rises over those hills. So what does that imply? Very effulgent, beautiful. Now listen to this verse. ikshito antapurastrinam savridi vrida prema viksitai kritschad vishvisto niragas jatah soharanmana.
The palace women would look upon Lord Krishna with shy, loving glances, and thus he would get free from them only with difficulty. He would then set off his smiling face, captivating their minds. I'm going to read this again, and then we'll read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. The palace women would look upon Lord Krishna with shy, loving glances, and would thus get free from them. He would thus get free from them only with difficulty. From what? Free from them means what? Free from?
Glances.
Their glances, because the glances aren't just coming from their eyes. Glances don't only come from the eyes, right? Not from the physical eye, but they're coming from the mind and heart. Just like when Krishna was in the forest, when he was just a little boy with Balaram, and they were taking care of the calves. This took place in chapter 11. Soon as they left Gokul to become free from the demons, they arrived in the Vrindavan forest, and in one place, Kamsa sent one of his dearest friends, who was very powerful, and who took the shape of a calf. And he entered amongst the other calves, trying to disguise himself as one of the calves. And his plan was to grab Krishna, grab Balaram, throw him over his shoulder, and carry him back to Kamsa, so Kamsa could kill them. But he this was his plan. And he was mingling with the other calves, and Krishna and Balaram saw him. And they said, and Balaram said to Krishna, "Krishna, look at that calf over there. He wasn't here with us this morning, was he?" What was in his heart was coming out his eyes. And immediately Krishna and Balaram could recognize this. And Krishna then said, "Let's kill him. He must be a demon." So what do you think Krishna did? So Krishna began to massage the legs of all the calves nearby and began to stroke them. One by one he was massaging their legs, stroking them as he moved closer to the Svatasura. And then he grabbed Svatasura, surprised him, and grabbed him. And Svatasura was thinking, "Oh, Krishna doesn't suspect what I'm going to do." And Krishna was thinking, "Svatasura doesn't suspect what I'm going to do." And then Krishna grabbed him, because he was massaged, and he grabbed him, and as if he was going to massage him, he grabbed him by the legs, and he began to swing him around. That's what the Jiva Goswami describes, that he swung him around and around and around and around in a similar way to how Balaram killed Dhanukasura later on. He swung him around and around and around. And what happens if you get swung or spin around and around and around? You lose your orientation of who you are and where you are. So this demon, who was in the shape of a calf, got swung around and around and around, and he lost his ability to maintain his calf-like body. which he had assumed by his demonic powers. So then he changed into his real form, and then Krishna killed him, threw him into a tree. You know what kind of a tree? It was a kapita tree, which is a rose apple tree. If you know what that is, do you know what a rose apple tree is? Do you? Do you?
Do that? Like pomegranate, I don't know.
Maybe. Could be.
And the thorns. You've got thorns for sure.
So you threw them in the tree. So Krishna had a difficult time breaking away, going, because he was bound by the loving glances of the Antapura Strinam, Ikshito, by that glance, Antapura Strinam. So Vidha Prema Vikshitai, with great difficulty, by that glances, he got free, Vishita, he got free. And then they were trying to capture him, right? Because through the glance, their mind was coming out of their eyes, trying to capture his mind. And then Krishna, he defeated them actually by his smiling face, by his smile, his very sweet, sweet Madhuram smile. He captivated their minds. So it was like they were both tugging. And Krishna won by his smile. Krishna's glance and Krishna's smile, most captivating. Who was that on the phone?
Alita.
So we'll just read this comment. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes the scene as follows. The shy, loving glances of the palace women, hinting at their agitation, implied, "How can we tolerate this torment of being separated from you?" So just like, we'll ask you what it's in what way it's not like, but so much like when Krishna would go to the forest in Braja to herd the cows. How can we tolerate this torment of being separated from you? The idea here is that because Krishna was captured by their affection, he smiled, indicating, "My dear restless ladies, you are so overwhelmed by this little bit of separation. I'm coming back later today to enjoy with you." So that's what he indicated to them with a smile. And then, with his smile captivating their minds, he got away, only with difficulty, freeing himself from the bondage of their loving glances. Very wonderful. Now, very wonderful. But the palace ladies, we're assuming that they're the queens, they can look at Krishna because they were his queens. So they were allowed to look at him and he's leaving. But the gopis couldn't even look at Krishna while he was leaving because they were the wives of others or they were unmarried girls. So they couldn't even look at him, but yet they would look at him, glance at him out of the corner of their eyes, which made their glance even sharpen the points of their arrows. So there is a slightly different flavor . But it is more deep because it is more secret. It pierced even deeper because the glances couldn't be direct from the Brajagopikas. I had to make believe they weren't looking, even though everyone was looking at Krishna. There's a wonderful description of this at the end of the 15th chapter when Krishna returns from the forest after first day in Vrindavan Forest and after the killing of Dhunukasura. Okay, we'll stop here. So this is what it was like every day. This is Krishna's daily activities. Questions or comments?
You mentioned at the beginning that there is a difference between Krishna's pastimes and scientific ones. And you mentioned that there's a sweetness that you get from Krishna's pastime. I was just wondering, if someone has a submissive heart, would they receive that sweetness?
It certainly makes it easier. There's a different flavor that comes. But someone may have more taste for science fiction or other literature or whatever. That's what the material world is made of. So that taste, where does the taste for Krishna Katha come from?
Verse.
Who knows the verse?
Vasudeva Katarachi.
Yeah. Shushusha.
Shurganasha.
Vasudeva Katarachi, the taste. Vasudeva Katarachi, the taste for Vasudeva Katarachi. Shyan Mahasevayat Vipro Purnasir Tirthana Sevanat. Comes from Seva. Mahatseva. Gift, but the humility allows us to hear properly. Does that answer? Or do you want to ask more on that?
Envious people who accuse Krishna of being immoral, like having so many, you know, wives, and yesterday there was one detail of his activities. Well, somebody would hear, for example, always, you know, taking bath together with society girls. So somebody might criticize. What would be the right answer?
Because there's a tendency to, because it sounds mundane.
Yes.
So when we speak, we try to mention that. And these topics are generally not the topics to speak to people who are just first time at the temple. But sometimes it happens. So we have to emphasize the part of his Aishwarya at that time. So therefore And we can see the leelas here, just like in the last chapter, how carefully the Aishwarya was mixed. Because not only was Krishna bathing with society girls in some big pool that we can imitate, but what we can't do is do all these things simultaneously at the same time. In different places. So how could Krishna do these things? So obviously his performing of them isn't done with the same consciousness as we would perform them, because we can't do that. So we can't imagine what it would be like doing what he does. So obviously his consciousness is not like ours. Obviously. Because he's doing it in so many places at the same time. Can you even conceive of that? At the same time doing 16,108 things?
I can only conceive of chanting and not thinking at the same time.
But you can't even think at the same time of 16,108 things while you're chanting. You can only let your mind, or can only wander at one or two things at a time. But just try to imagine if you would thinking 16,108 things at the same time. Not only thinking it, but doing 16,108 things at the same time. Even us at our worst can't do that. So we can't even conceive of what Krishna's consciousness is like to be able to do these things. So all we can understand, we can offer our respects to it and to say that we can't make believe his consciousness would be like mine if I were doing this activity of bathing, because he's not only doing that, he's doing 16,107 other things at different times too of the day at the same time.
And to make it even more extraordinary, none of the people that he was doing this with knew that he was with another queen at the same time, even if they went into the neighborhood of that queen.
So he's completely in control of reality. He's the only one who knows reality, because he knows everything. We just get a piece of reality, and if you accept the piece as the whole, that's called illusion. So that describes our situation. We see one little pinch of reality, and we think that is reality, and that's our illusion. So how to explain this to people? I mean, talk just like I did, or five other ways, but thousands of other ways, but also they should hear Bhagavad Gita first, generally. But sometimes it just so happens.
Krishna wants to present a little bit.
I guess in translating and widely distributing Krishna book, Prabhupada was staying in the mood that he was not to be perturbed, to distribute. Is passed on as it is.
Yeah. And also because he explained them.
Indeed, yes. That's
yeah. He puts his purports. He weaves the purports within to the pastimes.
Yeah, yes.
So we'd be sure that he'd comment on these kind of things in his parts.
What?
But Radharaman is also pointing out that Prabhupada didn't mind. He liked it when the Krishna books itself were distributed, even though he wanted millions. At one time, I think he printed 100,000.
Wow.
Even Upadesamrita. I think at first they said, how many should we print? Like 5,000 or something. So no. He said 100,000. A couple of thousand devotees, so he had faith in the transcendental, the spiritual potency of the words that were written. That people wouldn't understand them, they would understand them, but yet the effect would be there, because his speaking had potency. And very often they didn't. People didn't. You read Bhagavad Gita. They read Bhagavad Gita. They couldn't figure out anything. What was going on?
Mm.
So many people said that, and then later on they could understand something. Have you ever met people who said that?
I couldn't understand
what you mean. Yeah, when you first read it.
I had it for almost 2 years. I think I read it.
My question?
Yeah. Have you ever met people?
Have you ever met anyone who picked up the Bhagavad Gita and picked it up and could not read it and couldn't understand anything? And then later on could understand, had a different reading. Have you? Have you ever met people like that?
Probably. We are the example of that. I mean, everyone is an example, probably.
but not in a general way, but specifically. Couldn't understand.
Like, I've met people who have read Bhagavad Gita, but they don't follow Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah. But I don't mean exactly that. Reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, but not being able to understand what Prabhupada is talking about. But later on, maybe they will.
For example, if I met people who say, why this book is talking about war and all that, you know? That's what a lot of people say, why they are actually fighting in the beginning and all that. You know?
So what do you tell them?
They started the second chapter. Because the first chapter stuck me up for a long time. I could never get past the first chapter. And then and it wasn't until much later that I, even 1 year after as a devotee, I read Bhagavad Gita. Because I just pick it up, it was about a war, and I always read books from beginning to end. So I'd always get to this war bit, oh, what is this book about? It's not about philosophy, and I just put it down again. I read all the other books. Nectarian Instruction was my favorite one.
Yeah? What was your favorite book first? I don't know.
Prabhupada Lilamrita.
And yours was Nectar Instruction. Mm-hmm. Sava, what was yours?
I think first book was called Coming Back. But that time I was not really interested as a devotee, just out of curiosity. But really as a devotee, or to be devotee was a path of perfection and life comes from life. Almost simultaneously.
Hema Krishnabhu, what was your favorite book at first?
Actually, I think the first book that I got, I don't even know about, was aware of Krishna as one of the books, and a friend just asked me to buy one whole set of these books. I just like the photograph of Bhagavatam. I was thinking it's too...
The whole set of Bhagavatams?
Yeah.
You bought?
I bought because of the photo. It's
so pious.
I just like the, it's so colors. So colorful, so beautiful, this body. I didn't even read it. I kept it for more than 10 years. I just looked at the photograph and saw the front and said, why so mystical? I just kept it. So I just kept it in the box.
But in your
so
house.
Mystical for me. You know.
I like it. Auspicious to have the Bhagavatam in your house. And you?
Mine was Krishna book, and I was very upset when the devotee sold my copy to the local bookstore. I had to go and buy it back.
Get a good deal. Linda, what was your favorite book? We're going to stop in 1 minute. This is the last.
In Dwarka, did they use Krishna's names in the Dhabi? The question?
Did they call him Yasodanandan?
Yasodanandan or Shyama, Shyama Sundar.
He left his flute in the care of Mother Yasoda. He didn't take his flute with him. No, they didn't. They didn't want to remind him at all of Vrindavan for many reasons. They didn't want him to go to Vrindavan because they thought and they knew that the love of the Brijbasis was greater than theirs, and they'd never get him back. They didn't want to remind him, because, and also because Krishna would stop crying, thinking about the Brijbasis. Do you think Rukmini would have called him Radhika Raman? Bhajan Janandan.
They called him, I mean, in the verse, it was mentioned something like Madhava.
But who's speaking that Sukadev to Maharaj Prakrit? Good night. Hare Krishna.